Americans now collectively owe more than $1 trillion in student loans. That's even more than we owe on our credit cards. And for the millions who are underwater on their mortgages, their loans cost more than their house is actually worth. In fact, many people entered into those loans without really understanding the terms of the deals. So now the Obama administration is pushing to begin teaching kids about money, and they're beginning with children as young as 3. Secretary of Education Artie Duncan joins us from his office in Washington. And also with us is Beth Koebleiner, author of Get a Financial Life and a member of the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability. So, Beth, we're talking about financial literacy here. How do American kids measure up compared to other kids around the globe?
This year, the international exam known as the PISA exam, that program for international student assessment, is going to test high school students on financial literacy worldwide. But we do know American children perform poorly on the Treasury Department's annual financial literacy challenge for high school students. The average score this year was a D+. And in the U.S., only 13 states require students to take a personal finance course in high school, whereas other countries like, you know, we hear what Singapore does. They give financial literacy lesson plans to teachers and weave it into the curriculum. Or in Australia now, it's mandated that financial literacy is taught from K through 10. So we have a long way to go before we get to a point where kids are learning what they need to know about finance.
You know, Secretary Duncan, I wonder if it's the recent financial collapse that has caused the new emphasis on financial literacy. Clearly, one of the things we learned after 2007 was that the American people, the adults, don't know as much about their own finances and their own money and how to figure out a mortgage rate, et cetera, as we wish they would.
That's exactly right. And there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that if we had a more financially literacy population, some of those horrendous things that happened to individuals and their families would not have happened. And as basic as teaching young people to read and to do math is, giving young people the skills to be financially literate and to take care of themselves, you know, through their working lives and into retirement, I think we have a tremendous obligation to do a much, much better job than we have in the past in providing young people with those skills.
But why isn't this the role of the parents? I mean, oftentimes your views on money also intertwine with your views on morality and your social ideas about how to interact with your own community.
Well, I think we all have a role to play, and parents have a really important role to play. But when we started a small public school in the South Side of Chicago, Ariel Community Academy, that had a financial literacy curriculum, and we started working with children as young as kindergarten on this, which was really fantastic, you have many parents who just don't have the experience themselves. And so part of our job was to help educate parents. And so where you have a parent that's worked in the financial sector, that's one thing. But when you're working in inner city disadvantaged communities, unfortunately, that's obviously not the norm. And so I think it's incumbent upon all of us not to point fingers, but parents need to step up. You know, churches, faith-based institutions can, but I think there's no place better than school to start to instill these lessons and these values.
You know, Beth, how does a parent handle this? I mean, I got into an argument with a friend of mine because I would share with my son when we were, you know, having financial trouble. And she said, you can't do that. You can't talk about money with a child.
Most people don't. And I think the reason is, like the secretary said, people are ill-equipped. They don't know how to talk about it. But you have to talk about it. And you're unusual in that way. You know, I'm on the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability. And one thing we did was create this tool called moneyasyougrow.org to help families teach their kids the basics. People are overwhelmed. Even those who want to teach their kids feel there's too much out there. What do I teach them? So we whittled it down to 20 essential money milestones kids should reach starting from age 3 up to their mid-20s. It's sort of like, you know, JFK had the fitness council,
right,
where you tell how many sit-ups and push-ups kids should be doing. Well, now we're going to teach kids what are the 4 things a 3 to 5-year-old needs to know about money, a 6 to 10-year-old, 11 to 14-year-old.
Secretary Duncan, I wonder, I mean, I'm sure you've signed a mortgage more than once in your life. I have. We're talking about pages upon pages of documents. You've seen the tiny print on the back of a credit card agreement. I mean, how much will financial literacy actually do to avoid mistakes when people are making important, critical financial decisions?
I think it'd go a tremendously long way. And again, the ramifications of these decisions are so huge for individuals and families. going in, knowing the facts. And the thing for me, especially when you start with young children, children want school to be interesting. They want it to be relevant. All of a sudden, what's going on in math class makes a lot more sense to them, and they're much more engaged in their own learning. So I think it builds skills and habits that will last a lifetime, but I think it engages them much better in their day-to-day learning. And that's been the joy of what we've seen at Ariel Community Academy, is young people in a relatively poor community with not a lot of opportunities outside of school are doing extraordinarily well in these areas. Coincidentally, math scores are off the charts. But you have young people investing in the stock market, starting to learn about philanthropy and giving, making gifts back to the community, to the school. There's an exposure here that, again, so many children don't get at the dinner table, that I think schools can play a great, great role. And the academic dividends as well, I think, are tremendous.
I talk to kids all over the country at schools, and whether they're, lower income families or upper income families, their eyes light up when they hear how much it'll cost to put money, to buy something on a credit card. And this is something they haven't learned in school and they haven't learned at home.
How politically charged is this, Secretary Duncan? I have to imagine that there are forces on Wall Street that would want to have some kind of say in what you're teaching kids and how they're being taught.
I think this is totally non-political, non-ideological, bipartisan. I think it's in the country's best interest to have a financially literate workforce and populace. And so there's been very little pushback on this, if any. I think we have a long way to go as a country. I think everybody feels the sense of urgency. And so I think politics and ideology really don't have a role to play here. And the more our young people are educated, the more they're building skills and habits that will last a lifetime. As you know, Celeste, just the economy has changed. If you go back a couple decades, many people would stay in the same job for 30 or 40 years and retire and get the gold watch and have their retirement taken care of by that company. And today, people are going to have 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 different jobs, and they have to know how to save and have to know about 401ks and be more thoughtful about mortgages. And if our education isn't keeping up with the realities of a very different economy, then I think we do young people a grave disservice.
I mean, I agree with the secretary in that it should be a non-political issue. And in the big picture, of course, you want an educated workforce. But I do think this is a real clear difference in that this is the role of government, that we want to offer unbiased information to children in schools and to parents that isn't selling something, for example, to kids, or isn't, having an agenda at play. And I think it's really great that there are some public-private partnerships going on to educate people. But I do feel the government here is essential in making sure people don't sign that mortgage document 20 years from now because they never learned about this in school or at home.
Beth, you sound really engaged. You're always a passionate person. The secretary sounds very engaged and he makes a compelling case. But I got to be honest, when I talk to my kids about money, which is often, they're not real thrilled by the whole subject matter. Neither one of them wants to be an accountant. They won't want to talk about budgets. They could not, get away fast enough if we start talking about pennies and dimes.
Right. The research shows, though, that it's from parents where they learn this, and dinner table conversations are essential when it comes to money. These are people who have dinner together, end up doing better with their finances as grownups. I think it's difficult, but moneyasyougrow.org, this site, I think is essential because it sparks a conversation. Any conversation, you teach your kid to shop around, you talk about something, you really, really want that iPad? Well, can you shop around and get it at a discount? Making it sort of a teachable moment, and those lessons that relate to kids, I think are the ones that really stick with them. But we have to change the dialogue in our society. We have to really realize, parents say they're more comfortable talking to their kids about sex and drugs than they are about money. Well, we have to start talking about money because it's essential that kids don't get into the trouble we were in now when they're in their 30s and 40s and 50s.
So, Secretary Duncan, are we aiming for the place where a kid can't graduate from high school unless they know how to balance their checking account?
I think, again, the more across the country folks are doing this, and I would just urge it not just be something we start talking about as a freshman or sophomore or junior, but exactly what you're trying to do with your kids, Celeste, and I'm trying to do with my kids. What are we doing at 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds? And this just becomes part of the natural dinnertime conversation. This becomes part of what we're integrating into you know, math and history and social studies and science and English and whatever it might be during the school day, this has to become the norm rather than the exception. And I absolutely think there are a set of skills that young people should be graduating from high school with. And if they don't have those skills, I think they're ill-prepared, ill-equipped. To take care of themselves as they move into the workforce and they move into college. And we know the credit card debt that college students get in trouble with is extraordinary, and that can impact them for years to come.
That's Arne Duncan, Secretary of Education, and Beth Koblenner, author of Get a Financial Life and a member of the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
You can hear more about students and personal finance tomorrow. Beth Koblenner will continue this conversation with a look at how to save for college.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.